the dignity of other people and the fact that there are other people who have certain rights.
Peace in the Middle East basically will come when the clergy in the mosque on Friday preach it, and when the rabbis in the synagogue on Saturday preach it. During the time of Camp David, one, you had political leadership that was able to contain that type of religious fervor. What the country needs is some prescient understanding of what is going to happen in the future. Welcome to another Leon China Report. Again, we are in Israel, in Jerusalem, Israel. We're talking with a young minister, young in looks, young in thought, young in everything. Her name is Tzipi Livni. She's the Minister of Housing as of yesterday, and Minister of Absorption, I guess, from a longer time. I knew her father. He was a terrific man. His name was Eitan Livni. He's one of my first associations in Israel. And he was fundamentally a very strong Zionist, and that's the best way to describe him, right-wing Zionist, I would say. Tzipi, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So you're very active now. You got two ministries. You got a prime minister that's a little bit hung up now into some kind of quabble with his Likud party. I think you're a pretty good backer of Sharon at this moment, aren't you?
Yes, because I believe in what he's doing.
Do you think that a central party or a committee of any party, Likud or Labor, should dictate the foreign policy of a country?
I believe that this is what vast majority in Israel believes in. And you mentioned my father, and on his grave, it is tattooed both sides of Jordan River as Israel.
And really?
Yes, really. By his request, as part of his will. And I believe that the Jewish people has the rights all over the land of Israel, but there's a need for us to keep Israel as a Jewish and democratic state, and that's why I believe that there is the time in which we have to compromise. And I believe that what I represented now represent vast majority in Israel. Unfortunately, it's not easy to do. There is no partner on the other side. The Palestinians cannot accept yet the existence of Israel as a Jewish state, but I believe that we'll have to choose at the end of the day between all of the land and between keeping Israel as a Jewish state and democracy, while these two values are going together, combined, and not going one against the other.
It's said that people take values from their parents. Basically.
I believe so.
No, I believe that too. So, obviously you have your father's values. Would he look at solving this problem by recognizing Palestinian state? What do you think?
Even though it looks like we changed our ideology, I don't think so. I believe that what I represent today is part of the education or the values that I was raised upon. I mean, it was not only about the land of Israel, but it was about the establishment of Israel as a Jewish state with values of, as you said before, he never spoke about money. It was about values, about justice, about believing in people,
well,
believing in the
man.
Jewish people.
Right.
And when it comes all together, unfortunately, we have to choose, because I cannot get it all. And that's why, by choosing, and because I believe that there's a need for us to combine our values as a Jewish state and a democracy, there's a need for me to compromise. I'm sure that it would have been difficult for him, maybe to see or to hear what I say today, but my mother, who was also part of the Irgun, she fought with him for the establishment of the state of Israel. And she once told me that it's very difficult for her to accept it, but she understands now that they fought for our future, and I have to take tough decisions for the future of my children, her grandchildren. And I believe that this is what I'm doing as part of what I was raised upon.
I'm not certain that Netanyahu is prepared to make the kind of concessions which I think Israel has to make in order to achieve peace. This is not what I understand from his positions. Tzipi Livni has different opinions. I don't think that she is the one who will ultimately decide about the Israeli position. And I certainly think that her positions are much more positive in terms of a peace agreement. But as I say, she is not the prime minister. The prime minister is crucial in these issues.
Sir, I think she is someone that I have tremendous respect for. When I talked about taking a personal journey, actually, he was one of the people that I had in mind. I remember Tzipi before the negotiations, and at the beginning of the negotiations, you know, holding to positions that were more reflective of her father's legacy and of her party's legacy. She was Likud. And through weeks and months of years of negotiation, she has transformed. She has changed. She was not pressured, no one forced her to change, but being engaged in a conversation, having to actually question and debate your own assumptions because you're being confronted with them at the negotiating table, gets you through the negotiation, gets through you through a personal journey towards peace. I think, though, so I'm hoping that Bibi will have a similar journey than her, but in terms of her choice as a negotiator, it is an easy yet unsustainable out. This way he's telling his public, or his at least right-wing constituency, nah, we're giving the left-wing their one chance and they will fail. This is the kind of knock and win and wink that you have there. He was not the first to do it, by the way. Ehud Barak did it in his choice of his first chief negotiator, etc. This is but at some point, he will have or she will have to take a decision. And this is where we will know. Is he backing her? In which case, of course, he would confront his constituency. Or is he not? In which case, he will be seen internationally by Kerry, by others, as being insincere about the process. So he bought himself some wiggle room, but that will, I think, will be of limited duration.
Was your father a religious man?
It was traditional. I mean, it's a kind of a combination between he believed in the Jewish people, not only and the Jewish people. It's not only being religious. So it was very important for him to keep some of the
traditions,
some of the traditions, the connection. He went to synagogue, but he was not religious. I mean, he kept part of it because it was very important for him to keep something which is the common denominator between us, between him, and between the Jews in diaspora. This is the connection between the Jews who are living today and between those who were living in the land of Israel thousands of years ago.
All right, but that's a key issue now in Israel because you believe as a Likud person that you got to give up some land for peace. There are people who believe that you don't give up any land, period.
Okay.
So how do you overcome that?
As I said before, I believe that vast majority in Israel and also within Likud members understands that there's a need to compromise. I believe that only few of Likud members believe that time is working for us and that's why we should wait, do nothing, and
this was Shamir, basically.
Shamir and some of my friends in today's
politics. Uzi Landau on this show, Benny Begin on this show, said that they would never recognize a Palestinian state. On this show, we have tapes.
But Uzi Landau, by the way, I asked him because I said, listen, I would like to understand if you believe that you will never give up only even a small piece of land.
Right.
And he said, no, today, even he says...
Is that right?
...that doesn't need to do painful concessions. And when we are talking about painful concessions, we are talking about the land. But there are differences within among us. I mean, there are some people saying that they will never give up part of the land. There are some people saying that they will give up part of the land only when terror stops. There are some people saying that they will give up part of the land only when a final status agreement will be signed both sides, so when they'll find a partner on the Palestinian side. But it's like accepting the concept, but, you know, the differences are not in the concept.
We're both lawyers, yes. So there are a lot of nuances. Yes.
So we can agree upon the concept.
You will say that achievements in war make an historic fact. Never it happened. The U.S. can take over Mexico militarily. Does it make them the rulers of... you don't anymore annex people. You can annex land like in World War II and then you exchange it when there are people who are sitting there. So the same here. We annexed Jerusalem. We did not annex the West Bank. We half annexed the Golan Heights, not quite. And it's very clear that these are cards that will have to be swapped for peace. Everybody is talking about small changes, small population border exchanges, and this will be accepted, but not in terms of what we have now. What we have now is a huge obstacle to peace, and we cannot say this is a reality, it's a new reality. It's a one-sided new reality, by force, not by agreement.
But unfortunately, politics is not only about the need of the people, but sometimes about the need of politicians.
And many times.
Many times, yes. This was the understatement of the year, I believe what I said.
Do you get tired of this sometimes? You are a successful lawyer.
Yes, thank you.
And having a nice life. This is a tough life.
But it gives me power to be in politics, knowing that I have other alternatives outside. I mean, I like to practice law.
Right.
I earn my living. And that's why I can do in politics what I believe in. I mean, I don't have to survive in politics. I don't need it.
Right.
And that's why I'm doing what I believe is, as I said before, my father fought for the existence of the State of Israel. And I believe that I'm working for a better life for my children.
Never in my experience of politics would Menachem Begin have faced a revolution in the Likud party once he made a decision. And I can tell you from my own experience in Camp David 1, the successful one, that I once came to Menachem Begin and engineered a compromise between President Carter and Begin. And I said, Mr. Prime Minister, President Carter wants to know if you can carry the party. And he said to me in his Polish English, I will carry the party, don't worry. He had no problem with it. And he had Moshe Aarons up there and he had Shamir. These were guys who abstained.
And he had my father, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Against, it was difficult for my father to accept.
I know. I heard it personally.
So times for change. I mean, nobody respects anymore the leaders. Maybe we earned it, by the way, the lack of respect from the public.
The prime minister is the leader. He doesn't have to surrender to pressure. He has to withstand against any pressures and do what needs to be done in order to achieve these goals.
I think any leadership that does not produce the ultimate need of the people, not desire, but need, is failing. And I believe that the people of Israel and the people of Palestine, I believe they really, the Palestinians certainly want a state and their own political self-expression and their rights, and Israel wants and needs peace.
It sounds to me like an excuse built up in advance in order to justify a non-agreement. Otherwise, if the Knesset, which is a representation of the democratic will of the people of Israel, is sufficient for an agreement, why do we need more? Why do we need to go through all these stages?
So, today, we have a culture that treats lying to the people lightly. And lying to the people and lying to oneself as a leader comes very close.
Yeah, we interviewed a psychiatrist, and we asked what it meant to the population to have such an unstable government. And it obviously causes unbelievable stress and no fixation. So what people do is they detach from the news. They don't read newspapers. They don't listen to television.
So
what happens then, and it's interesting theory, is zealots are the ones that do it. And a minority of the people who read newspapers and have this ideology, they start to control the country.
Okay, but in Israel, most of the people are, we have news every half an hour on the radio. You cannot open a station without hearing the news, unfortunately, by the way.
In Israel, it would seem to me that maybe the people could unite a little bit better behind their government so they can move it. I tell you, I must admire Sharon because it's a reversal of a lot of his old policies for him to make this move. I mean, this is what one calls leadership. This is really leadership. When you can reverse such doctrines that you had, because if you go back and get tapes, he was the guy that put the settlements there. And he's fighting very strongly for it. And I think the American government appreciates it very much. I really don't know what will happen over here, but I think it's important that credibility be kept. And I don't know how you get that to your people in Likud. I don't know. Calls for statesmanship.
Yes, as I said before, maybe more than that, because unfortunately there are some people looking, as you asked before, maybe an election now.
Talk to these people. Some of them are very intelligent. And they'll say to you, but we can't give up the land. You know, we just can't do it. It's part of our heritage. It's the Eretz Yisrael Shlema. And they're intelligent people, and their kids are getting killed all the time in these settlements. What kind of psyche do they have?
Some of them are believers.
Right.
I mean, they believe that maybe in the future something will happen. But as I said before, most of Likud members and most of Likud parliament members are not holding the idea of never give up some of the land. Mostly, they are thinking that they know better, that we should do it with an agreement. And I'm trying to tell them that, first of all, it's risky. Listen, even deciding this decision of the disengagement plan, it's not an easy decision. So it's risky. And it's much more easier to say no. But usually what I say, and this is true to the Likud within Israel and to Israel among the international community, there is no vacuum when it comes to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And when the Likud party knew to say only no, train left the station and bad train. Oslo agreement was a mistake.
Absolutely.
And it was because Shamir hesitated, Madrid, and so on. And then, so we got Oslo agreement. And then Netanyahu hesitated, and we got Barak with Camp David, which part of the agreement, it's not an agreement, but the understanding in Camp David are very difficult, and they are also a mistake. So I'm trying to explain, Likud members, listen, our role is to lead this country and to initiate. And there is no, when it comes to solving the conflict, I'm not even talking in terms of living in peace, eternal peace, to live happily ever after, because we are talking about living in non-violent status quo in the near future. This is the goal right now, unfortunately. And there's a need to initiate. And it's risky, but we can do some steps to be sure that we are not putting Israel at risk. And if we'll not do it, Labour Party will do it. Because most of the people in Israel, they see peace, they dream about peace, they want the initiatives. And it is true also when it comes to Israel among the international community. When Israel initiates nothing, well, somebody has his own plan. It can be also Israel opposition.
Still, I do believe, as it was just announced this morning in Haaretz, that 55% would or might support a peace agreement, even in a referendum, once a prime minister will bring it to the Knesset and will be confirmed, then even without knowing what will be this contract, then they will support, the support will be something around 55%. That means that both of Israelis will always support a real leader who will come and say truly to the to his people, yes, I did it. I fought for that. I insisted on my interest, on our interest, on the security of Israel.
Yeah, you're very logical. And if I really could, I would be listening to you and understand it. What I don't understand, I don't know how you move them, is the diehards. I don't know how you do it. I know that Ruby Rivlin, who's a good friend of mine, is an ideologue and doesn't believe in a Palestinian state, doesn't believe, but he's democratic. And if the Knesset votes to do what you want to do, he'll go along with it. He has his own position, but democratically, he'll move with it.
Okay, so on. No,
go ahead.
No, I'd like to say something. No, I know that also here people are using his ideologue. He believes in the land of Israel. I believe that I'm also... It's not the lack of ideology by the decision of doing something like this, like the disengagement plan or like giving up some of the land. It's not lack of ideology. It's more complex ideology.
It's realistic.
It's not only about the land, but it's about the future life of our children. It's about the values that they will grow upon. So it is more complex, but this is also part of the values that we have. But it is not only, you know, one flag. We have some, and we have to decide which is more maybe important or more realistic, as you say, for today. And this is why I believe that at the end of the day, things will happen, and we will move toward something better. But unfortunately, we spoke about Likud members and about our party and about Israel. But there's a need also to find on the other side leadership,
right.
Somebody to talk with, somebody who believes really in peace, not terrorists, people who are not only talking in terms of two-state solution.
People think that if Arafat were out of the picture, that there are people to talk to, Abu Mazen, Abu Allah.
Maybe in the future.
Do you talk, by the way, to PLO people?
Yes.
How do you find them?
It's not on a personal basis.
No, I don't mean that. No.
Okay.
Do they listen?
Some of them are listening. Some of them are very manipulative, especially when it comes to third parties like the Europeans or the Americans. And there is nobody, unfortunately, that can not only speak against Arafat, but do something which is not under the leadership of Arafat. And I think that this is now an understanding, an international understanding, that Arafat is an obstacle. And we are paying the region, maybe the world, is paying the price of the ego of one person, bombastically untrustworthy, terrorist, which is still... I don't know, in a strange way, the hero of the Palestinians and both sides, Palestinians and Israelis. And as I said before, it affects the world. They are paying the price of this person.
All right, we had a cut for a break. We'll come right back and talk with Tzipi Livni.
Every budget, so don't accept defeat.
Now you can get covered in steel.
Buy me treats.
You take care of your pets. Now it's their turn to take care of you. Visit GetCoveredAmerica.org to learn about your health insurance options.
Thanks for calling the GED Pep Talk Center. Jerry Siller speaking. Your level 7 in your face pep talk.
I can keep pushing. Believe me, I'm good at it. But at some point, you're going to need to start pushing yourself.
See, once you've got your GED diploma, you'll feel so good about yourself.
You tell them. You can't change your past, but you can definitely change your future.
That makes me so happy, I'm ready to bust out a dance.
Mr. Trejo, can I transfer this guy to you? My gentle technique isn't really working. You need something a little more persuasive.
Yes.
You listen, and you listen good.
Hey, where's my sandwich?
Terry? Terry!
Take it from me to King DMC. It's a real cool thing to get your GED.
Get that diploma!
Now hold on, and we'll find you free GED classes. Capiche?
Whatever motivation you need, we've got a pep talk for you. Get your GED pep talk and find free classes at yourged.org.
I wish I was in school.
If only I had a math test today.
I'll stay after class.
I'll clean the chalkboard.
I wish I was in school.
School ends, but free lunches for your kids don't have to. Find your local food bank at feedingamerica.org/summermeals for help.
It's one of the many ways to fight osteoarthritis pain. For more information on managing pain, go to fightarthritispain.org.
When you throw away money on wasted electricity, you're throwing away everything you could have bought with it. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov.
Back, we're talking with Tzipi Livni. I'm in Israel, Jerusalem, the holy city of, I guess, David started this thing, King David, and look where we are. A lot of people want to get connected to it. Now it's Israel's Jerusalem, and there will be future fights over Jerusalem, which we'll talk about with Tzipi, but are you upset with the International Court of The Hague and the way the Israeli government handled it? You think they should have been more on top of it than, and A, and B, is it a dangerous thing for Israel?
It is dangerous, and mostly I cannot understand it. I will explain. And I believe that at the end of the day, we could have known from the beginning that this is going to be the
verdict.
The verdict, regardless what Israel would have done or say. And this is something I cannot understand because, and this is also part of the hypocrisy of Palestinians, because I can hear the last years people are talking in terms of two-state solution and the need to divide the land of Israel between Jordan River and Mediterranean Sea for two. Now, because of security reasons, there was a need for us to give people, to give them life. I mean, we are facing terrorist attacks. We are burying today children and people that were killed, and because of these security reasons, we decided to build this fence. And the day we made this decision, there was a strange position in which extreme right in Israel took against the fence with Palestinians, because the right wing of political map in Israel understands that at the end of the day, there's a meaning of dividing the land by the fence, regardless to the exact line of the fence. And the same day we decided to build the fence, even regardless it was not decided where the line will be, I found the Palestinian, you asked me about meeting Palestinians, I was in a convention in Germany, and this is something that my father never would have done, going to Germany. But it was important for Israel, and
Benny Begin will never go to Germany.
It was the first time that I was in Germany because I believe that it is important to represent Israel. And I met Palestinians, and they spoke about the defense in terms of Berlin Wall. And I said, what is the matter with you? I mean, Berlin Wall divided one people for two. And the whole idea is to divide two people who are living between Jordan River and Mediterranean Sea. For two, you can say that you are not accepting the exact line. Okay, this is something that I can understand, but this is totally not Berlin Wall. And more than that, when it comes to, this is also part of the values, what looks like the values of the international community. No, you're both lawyers. And there is a distinction in any penal code, in every democratic state, between a murderer and between somebody who killed by mistake. There's a difference between giving life to somebody and between uneasiness that maybe it caused to other. And when it comes to defense, there's a need for me to give life or to secure the life of Israeli citizens. I know that some of them are living in blocks of settlements. Okay. But I have to choose between their life and between the uneasiness of a farmer to go to his field. Excuse me. I believe that any person with his right mind, any moral person, would have made the same decision or the same choice. But I can see now the international community, not all of them, are talking in terms of, but it's very difficult for Palestinians. And more than that, we are changing all our defense systems. Until now, and because unfortunately the Palestinian society embraced these terrorists within the Palestinian cities, we have our soldiers within the cities trying to find the terrorists. And by putting defense, it could make their life easier because we can take our soldiers and put them near the fence and give security only to part of the settlements that are on the other side of the fence. And about 90% of the West Bank is on the east side of the fence. I mean, what are you talking about? And for me, it is also a kind of another evidence to the sad understanding that the Palestinians are talking in terms of two-state solution, but they are not accepting it. And what the Europeans are expecting for us? I mean, in Europe, it took 50 years to take off the borders. When it comes to two-state solution, we are not going to live with open borders like in Europe the first week, okay? It will take us also some time.
So at the end of the day, when it comes to the borders, I think we have to look at a situation where both the Israeli leader and the Palestinian leader who signs a peace deal will have a compelling victory speech to his or her public. The Israeli leader needs to be able to stand up to his or her public and say, I uprooted a minimal number of Israeli citizens, of settlers. For the Palestinian leader, he or she will have to stand up to their public and say that I got the equivalent of 1967 borders. I got what Sadat got. I got what Hussein got. I got the equivalent of 1967 borders. How do you do that? Actually, this is one case where a circle can be squared. And we figured it out. Most of the settlers live on areas adjacent to the 1967 borders, around 2%, give or take, depends how you calculate it. Around 80% of the settlers live around 80%, around, yeah, 80% of the settlers live around 2%, in around 2% of the West Bank, which is almost adjacent to the 1967 borders. Israel annexes these settlements. Instead of this land that the Israel annexes, it gives the Palestinians an equal amount of land from within Israel. So the Israeli leader can say that I did not displace 80% of the settlers. And the Palestinian leader says, I got the equivalent of 100% of the territory that was lost in 1967. So this is really the formula. At the end of the day, whether it is on Jerusalem, on borders, on refugees, any of the issues, there is what you believe is right, your position in international law, your position in your own sense of history. This is what we call a maximalist opening position. You will never get that in negotiations. The very concept of negotiation is that you compromise. And therefore, the question is, how do you ensure that you get that something that is sufficient and do not let the perfect be the enemy of the good? Because often, when you stick to your opening position, I will only accept 67. I will never accept the division of Jerusalem. You actually end up with neither. You do not get your position, and you only get the current reality that can only get worse.
I have responsibility for the life of people who are living, partially maybe not in settlement, and I have to take some responsibility in taking or not giving up some of our assets for the future negotiations. So we have to establish or to build this fence because of security reasons, but it's not only legal matter. It's more than that. It's very complex, but the legal issue is only a part of it.
Were you upset when you saw these things happen, or you understand?
Yes.
You were.
Yes.
We are neighbors of the Palestinians, so whichever way we look at it, at the end of the day, there will be a border between us and them. But the question is not what is morally right, although it's not unimportant. The question is where the Palestinians live. They live in those territories, and they live in such great numbers that there is not a chance that they will agree to leave. And if they don't get their own freedom and the right for self-determination, then there is a likelihood that at the end of the day there will be an agreement or an understanding that between the Jordan and the sea there is one state for two peoples. And this is, I think, something very bad.
Do you think you could ever have a constitution in this country?
Well, I hope so, because one of the mistakes that we've done is to say... I spoke at the beginning of the interview. It was very clear that Israel was established as a Jewish and democratic state, but nobody knows what's the real meaning of these two values. I mean, everybody knows what a democracy is, and if you ask children in the street, they will quote, I think they will quote the Fifth Amendment or something, because they are watching the American television. But we have also to decide what's the meaning of Israel as a Jewish state.
What is a Jew? I ask this of everybody. I asked David Omar, what is a Jew? People have struggles with it. I asked the rabbits, he was very clear. A Jew is a man who follows Torah. Period. But there, I ask Ezra Weissman what a Jew is, and he's cultural and historical, and he doesn't talk that much, and it's very complex.
It is very complex. This is maybe the most complex question, but more than that, even after an understanding what is the meaning of being a Jew, it is more complex to decide what is the meaning of being a Jewish state. I mean, a state is not practiced religious.
Correct.
And we are not. So I believe that it's more about the tradition or the symbols that we spoke about at the beginning. Well, I spoke about my father. It's about the flag, it's about the anthem, it's about Jerusalem, its capital. It's about Shabbat, about Saturday as the day off. It's about holidays. It's about what... at the end of the day, this is the real common denominator between Israelis and Jews in the diaspora.
Do you think there would be a Jewish state if there was no Holocaust? I'm sorry. You got enough problems in the cabinet. I don't want to knock you out over here.
The movement or the Zionist movement started before, and we got the Balfour Declaration in before the Holocaust. So it was a kind of process toward this goal. But I don't know. But you know what's worrying me the most? That I know that if the United Nations would have...
The UN resolution?
The UN resolution.
181.
If they will have the possibility to redecide of the establishment of the state of Israel...
They will revoke it.
Yes.
I agree.
And this is something that goes underneath... It's about the legitimacy of Israel as a Jewish state among the international community. And there is a kind of an unawareness within Israel is to this process. And, you know, I heard Kofi Annan in Durban. It was 2 weeks, I think, before September 11th. And he said that the Holocaust doesn't give you the right, you, the Jewish people, Israel, I know, to do certain things. And one of them was to displace people. And this is regarding displacement, he meant to the establishment of the State of Israel, because this is something that happened while the State of Israel was established and because of the war that the Arab world declared on Israel. So in a way, even maybe without an understanding, he said something that the meaning is that the Holocaust doesn't give you the right to establish your own state.
All right, we're going to cut for a break, and I have two big questions for you. Number one, Abu Vilan, who is a member of the Meretz Party, had an article in Haaretz a couple, two, 3 weeks ago saying that he's afraid of a civil war. And I want your opinion on that. And then I want to talk to you about how do you keep the demographics Jewish in this state.
Okay.
We'll be right back. Tippi's going to think about those answers, and I'm sure she'll come back with something that's realistic. As you can tell, she's a realistic woman.
Kitchen surfaces, utensils, and hands with soapy water. 1 in 6 Americans will get sick from food poisoning this year. Keep your family safer. Check your steps at foodsafety.gov.
Hey, going out like that?
Yeah, why?
Well, what would the neighbors think?
I see you! Come look at Mr. Feather!
Look what I have.
Mr. Bird, remember? We're just playing. We're just playing. I'm trying to get you out of here. Even still.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you.
Can you consent with me? Imagine what you'd see if every child had a book to read.
Read to a child today and spark a lifetime of ambition.
Know what?
What?
Since I got adopted, I've learned a lot about these humans.
I know. I mean, check out these two. It's Flirt City over here.
Yeah, I noticed that. It looks like my human is definitely into your human.
Oh, look! I think she's getting his number.
Nice.
Your human's got some sweet moves.
Takes after his dog. Oh, look, they're doing that thing where they put their arms around each other.
She kicked up a leg. It's like in the movies.
That's awesome. Looks like we're going to be hanging out a little bit more.
The average text takes your eyes off the road for nearly 5 seconds.
Wow, these are really good.
You act surprised. Practice makes perfect.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you.
Traditional light bulbs actually generate 9 times more heat than light. Switch to Energy Star light bulbs, and you'll realize just how much cash you are really burning through. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov.
We're back. I'm Leon Charney. We're talking with Tippi Livni, who's the Minister of Absorption and Housing as of yesterday in Housing. And she's a real supporter of Sharon in his cabinet, and believe me, he can use good support at this point. Tippi, did you read that article about the possibility of a civil war?
Unfortunately, only the headlines.
Oh. Do you believe there could be a civil war here within 6 months?
I hope not. And I spoke with some of the settlers, trying to explain them that at the end of the day, we share the same values and our mutual goals that we can work together, like flourishing the Negev and the Galilee and other places, and we can go together. And it is not less important the strength of Israel society. And we spoke about Begin. He said years ago that there will never be a war between brothers in Israel.
I can only say that Israelis over many years failed to understand what needs to be done in order to reach an agreement. We were, I think, dominated by wild dreams that we can achieve a lot more, that there can be an agreement with continued Israeli control over a large part of the territories, and I think that this is an historic mistake. And there were a few leaders that stumbled because of this.
All right, demographically, how do you keep Israel a Jewish state?
Aliyah, bringing Jews to Israel, calling them to come. There are 6 million Jews in North America. Come to Israel, live with us. This is your place. Thank you.
How is your immigration now? Is it? By the way, Yitzhak Shamir told me the greatest thing that he accomplished as prime minister was bringing 1 million Russian Jews here.
Yes, it is. It was very important. It is still important, but you know, in Russia now the numbers are reduced. So, and there are 1 million. New immigrants in Israel, and it made wonderful. So it changed Israel economy, it changed Israel society, but we need more people to come, and the largest Jewish community in the world now is in North America. So I believe that Zionism is not ended, and there's a need to encourage these people to come, to live in Israel, because I think that sometimes when I met one of a Jewish leader in North America, and I told him that I'm a minister for immigrant absorption, and he said, okay, you have a wonderful job to bring all these Russians to Israel, or the Ethiopian Jews, and I said, listen, but this is not the end of it. I mean, I think that some of the Jews in diaspora believe that the job was done. I mean, we established the state of Israel, and we have to fight terror and come to an agreement with the Palestinians, and this is the end of and this is and we made it, but it's not over.
How do you encourage people to come? I mean, that's your ministry.
Within my ministry, we are trying to ease their life while they are coming. I mean, there is what we call immigrants absorption basket. Money that they got, we are trying to give them the possibility to learn Hebrew, to practice, to find job, to integrate into Israel society. I believe in young people, because it's more difficult for people with family, parents, to take the children to come. But when we are talking about young people, we can offer them 3 years in Israel university for free. This is something that Israelis don't have. But
really? You see any immigration from France now?
Yes, more than what used to be in the past, but not enough. There are about 500,000 Jews in France, but only 2,000 or 3,000 are coming a year, so this is nothing.
All right, the Ministry of Housing, you just got it.
Yes.
The tick, as they say, the file. What does the Ministry of Housing do?
Ministry of Housing is in charge on planning the future places in which future cities and towns is as well, building some...
It's a huge ministry, isn't it?
Yes, interesting.
I think Eric Sharon was...
Yes.
Right?
Yes. for the rock. But when Arik Sharon was Minister for Housing, I didn't know him, and I practiced law in the private sector. And he decided to build five or seven new cities in Israel. And as a lawyer, I cannot say that I built the cities, but as a lawyer,
I represented people. So basically, you can create settlements, and is that within your power too?
It is in my power, not only in my only power, because to build new settlements, there's a need for authorization not only from the Ministry of Housing, but also from the Ministry of the Minister of Defense and Prime
Interior.
Minister.
Wow.
And,
but he was a bulldozer with that, Sharon. He built. He was a strong guy.
Settlements.
Yeah.
Not anymore. We are not doing it anymore. And now part of our vision is to, parallel to the disengagement plan, is to strengthen what we call blocks of settlements, but not to build new settlements.
One of the things that we spoke about before, and you said was maybe your proudest moment, when you convinced Condoleezza Rice and the Bush administration to take this right of return off the map.
Yes. It was not only my
Were you the progenitor?
Listen, I watched Ehud Barak in Camp David, and for the first time I understood that an Israeli government is talking in terms of two-state solution on one hand, and my logical understanding was that the meaning of two-state solution is one is Israel, the homeland for the Jewish people that was established also after the Holocaust, that gave home for all these refugees that left Europe and fled the Arab states. We called them to come and we gave them new home. So the future Palestinian state should have been the answer to the Palestinians wherever they are, those who are living in the territories and those who left in 48. And unfortunately, I found out that there are some misunderstanding because people are talking in terms of two-state solution on one hand, but on the other hand, they are going back to Oslo saying, okay, there's a need to give an answer to certain issues. Settlements, borders, Jerusalem, and refugees. So it looks like it's unconnected issues.
They are.
And I believe that there's a need to make this connection between the establishment of a Palestinian state, and the fact is that the establishment of a Palestinian state takes off the Israeli table, the Jewish state out of the two states, the question of refugees, from any aspects. And meanwhile, a Palestinian state became a fact. I mean, everybody even though it was not established yet, everybody in the international community looks like it is a fact. And then I read an article of Yasser Arafat explaining his vision about a Palestinian state, and it was about 67 borders, Jerusalem its capital. And the second paragraph started with the words, in addition, there's a need to find a solution to the refugees. And he mentioned in his what was called moderate article that if the question of refugees will remain unsolved, the conflict will remain unsolved.
So were you the first to pick this up?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. And I explained it in Israel, because in Israel, you know, we are easy. I mean, most of the people say...
You have a foreign ministry. They're supposed to read these
things. It's more than foreign ministry. Listen, I try to explain it in cabinet meetings.
They didn't understand in addition?
They said, listen, at the end of the day, nobody. We will say no. And I said, it's not... If we'll come to a position in the future in which a Palestinian state will be a fact, the world, the international community will, or the television will take off its camera from the territories. They will go directly to the refugee camps, to these people that are being kept as cats for Palestinian political goals for years, and they will, and this will remain as an unsolved issue, and will be also, it can take the legitimacy of Israel as a Jewish state. Again.
You and I are in agreement. The fact that no one noticed this is beyond my comprehension.
Because in Israel it was totally in consensus that no refugee will enter Israel. So they didn't see that underneath there's a process.
I'm going to tell you.
I think no one should be asked to drop their dreams. Okay? Meaning, Hebron, Jericho, Bethel are all names, places that will always be part of Jewish identity, of the Jewish narrative, of the Jewish dream. In the same way that Jaffa and Akko and Yaffa and Haifa and all of these will always be part of the Palestinian dream. We will always write poetry about the orange orchards of Jaffa. You can never ask people to give up their dream. But you will what you can do to them is to make sure that these dreams do not sabotage their lives and realities. And as such, when it comes to the issue of refugees, I do very strongly believe, and I think this is something that's understood by anyone who is serious about the negotiations, this includes Arafat and other Arab Palestinian negotiators, the refugees will, 8 million refugees, will not go back to Israel. Israel was created for one reason. Whether you like this reason or not, that's the reality, is to be a homeland of the Jewish people. 8 million Palestinian returning refugees will destroy their dream, and therefore Israel will not accept it. So if you want a peace deal, if you want the end of the occupation, the exercise of the right of return will never happen.
We're running out of time. Tell me, what's your day like? How many hours a day you work?
12, 10, as much as I can.
How many days a week?
6. We spoke about ultra-Orthodox.
How old are your children?
17 and 14.
Are you optimistic for their future in Israel?
I have no other alternative. I mean, I believe that they have a future in Israel. I believe in Zionism. I believe in the state of Israel. I believe in the Jewish people, and I believe in my children.
Tippi. Pleasure to see you. You've heard it all from Tippi Livni, a real fighter for the rational side, I would say, of the Likud. And I guess a lot of people are hoping that she's on the right track and can move the government. We'll have to watch it. We'll see you next week.